Hello and welcome to the Do One Better podcast in philanthropy, sustainability, and social entrepreneurship. I'm your host, Alberto Ligi from London. Please click that subscribe button and follow us if you're not already doing so, and do leave us a rating and a review. It helps others to find the show as well. Today, it's an absolute pleasure to welcome back onto the show Daniela Ligiero, who's the Chief Executive Officer and President of Together for Girls. And she's also the co-founder of the Brave Movement. Together for Girls is a global public-private partnership dedicated to ending violence against children, especially sexual violence. And in today's conversation, we're really going to drill into the Brave Movement, a key initiative of theirs. The Brave Movement is a survivor-centered global movement fighting to end childhood sexual violence and to engage policymakers and consequential leaders in order to drive forward positive change. So on that note, and without further ado, Daniela, wonderful to see you again, and welcome back onto the Do One Better podcast today.
Thank you so much, Alberto. It's wonderful to be back.
Yeah, well, I think it's pretty much 3 years since you last joined us on the show talking about Together for Girls. Today, we're going to be talking about Together for Girls, where you're the Chief Executive Officer and the President. But we're also going to be focusing on this Brave Movement that you founded as well, which I hear great things about. So perhaps what we could do, which would be a sensible starting point, is give us a little bit of an overview, a recap of Together for Girls, and then we can delve into the Brave Movement.
Sure, absolutely, Alberto. And it is really great to be back. It's been a lot. We've done a lot since we last spoke. Together for Girls is a partnership, and we are focused on one objective, and that is ending violence against children and adolescents. And we focus especially on sexual violence, which is a very taboo kind of silent pandemic, really, is what we like to call it globally, that affects children and adolescents in every country, of every race, social class, nationality, and gender. And we've been doing this work at Together for Girls for about 15 years. We're going to be 15 this year. And our vision is that this is such a big issue that there's not a single sector or a single individual or actor that can do this alone. So we work in partnership. We believe that there's strength in numbers, and together we can really tackle these issues. Our model has been pretty much the same since the beginning. We think that when you combine data, evidence, science with advocacy, you can really drive action on these issues. And so the Brave Movement really starts to get into that advocacy piece. And I'm happy to say a little bit more about that.
Yeah, well, would love to. And by the way, for our listeners who want to find out more about Together for Girls, do take a look or listen at that conversation we had 3 years ago in early 2021, which I think will serve you well. Yes, I was having a coffee actually with one mutual acquaintance of ours, Howard Taylor, of the Global Partnership to End Violence.
Great.
And he mentioned some of this wonderful work you're doing with Brave Movement. And I thought it'd be great to have you back on the show and really delve into that. I know the fact that it has the word movement already gives me an insight into the collaborative spirit underpinning it, but let's go. Tell me and tell us a little bit about the Brave Movement.
Yeah, this has been a long time dream. You know how you have these ideas and it takes a while to get to making them real, but it's really been a phenomenal journey for me. I think for a long time, I've really understood and I've seen through the work of Together for Girls, but also in other sectors, that you can do a lot of evidence building and science and really understand a problem and understand the solutions. But unless there's that political pressure to act, it's not going to really happen. People aren't going to pay attention. They're not going to invest. Leaders are busy. We have multiple crises happening. And you know, I remember when I used to work at the U.S. Department of State on PEPFAR, you know, there were so many things we needed to focus on. And so this idea that just because we know what the evidence is, we're going to do something about it, isn't really the way humans work. I'm sure you've heard a lot about that on your show. We're not that rational. And so part of it is, how do we, when we think of the issue of childhood sexual violence, again, it is so widespread. It affects approximately 1 in 4 girls and 1 in 8 boys around the world. That is a very large number of kids and adolescents who are experiencing some form of sexual violence, most of them never tell anyone. We know that from the data. They never share that. And those that do, you know, don't really get services or get the help that they need. They might tell a friend, an acquaintance. The reactions they get when they tell people are usually not good or positive. And so really, you know, if we're going to tackle this issue, we have to start to, first of all, bring it out into the open and break the silence around it. And then we have to put pressure on our leaders, whether it's political leaders, heads of organizations, religious leaders, others, to do something about it. And we know there's a ton you can do. Turns out you don't have to just sit back and like let this happen, because we've been building this evidence for 2 decades. Yeah, so Brave came out of that. And I will say, Alberto, I worked for a long time in HIV, and that was really the inspiration for me. I saw really brave people come forward and say, I'm HIV positive, and we're going to end the stigma around this, and we demand treatment, we demand prevention. You know, you can think of celebrities like Magic Johnson, but also so many like everyday people living in small villages across sub-Saharan Africa who were watching their friends die, as well as, you know, in the US, there was a huge movement with LGBTQ plus folks who were primarily affected at first, going to the streets. And that really gave me a lot of inspiration and courage.
And you mentioned the word stigma. You mentioned how the data, it shows that, you know, many people just don't voice their experience.
Yeah.
What is it that you're, well, I guess, first of all, what's the state of affairs in terms of the policymakers, those key stakeholders, those consequential leaders globally? What's the state of affairs, and what is it that you're trying to get them to embrace or understand?
So the state of affairs is, it is woefully inadequate everywhere. So The Economist does something called an Out of a Shadows Index. And what they do is, and we've helped support that process as well as a lot of other folks, they rank countries. And at this point, I think they're up to 80 countries on how well they're doing in terms of prevention and response on this issue. And the highest score is a C. So in the 70s, for those of you who don't follow letter grades, that's embarrassing for this kind of an issue. And most countries are really just not investing enough, doing enough. As an example, in the US where I live right now, the US government spends $1 million a year for the CDC to do research on prevention of child sexual abuse. $1 million. And this is a budget that is billions of dollars for research on all kinds of issues related to health. And then we spend billions incarcerating people when they perpetrate it. So we're never going to end this if we don't start to really do basic things like, you know, background checks for teachers, you know, or anyone that works in a youth serving organization, having a way to report them when something bad happens. You know, you might remember, your listeners might remember Larry Nassar, who was the coach of the Olympic gold medalists in the US. He was allowed to abuse over 230 girls over a period of 20 years. And over again, people reported him and no one did anything.
This budget, this 1 million, which 1 million in without the context seems like, wow, okay, you can buy a nice house. But actually, as you pointed out, the budget of the CDC, it's a drop. So tell me a little bit about that. So 1 million for that research. First of all, are we lacking in the research itself? Is there more that needs to be done in terms of gathering insights, data?
Yes, absolutely. So I think I always say there are two buckets. There's a bucket that is, we know certain things that we should do and we're not doing them. And we've done this research. If you go on our website, we have a document called What Works to Prevent Childhood Sexual Violence. And we've ranked interventions from around the world. There are a ton of effective and promising interventions that we're not doing. So I just gave some examples of like making sure they're, you know, that you, any institution that works with children in any capacity, sports, schools, religious organizations, needs to have some basic safeguards, right? There's some other examples of interventions like whole of school approaches, parenting programs. There's a lot that we know works, and that's not happening. And we need to do more research, because sometimes one intervention will work well with one community, but maybe not as well with another community. So it's both. The field, again, is woefully underfunded. And so part of what we're trying to do is say, what I always like to say, it's not that we need to spend more. If we spend more here, we're going to save more later on. Because we also know that everything from substance abuse to depression to suicide, you know, we have a huge mental health crisis now for adolescents and youth all over the world, with anxiety and depression spiking. But a lot of the drivers have to do with violence that kids are experiencing online, offline, and we're actually going to save money if we do some of this stuff.
So not so much about spending as opposed to investing, wise investments into the long term. Now, if we look at these two buckets, and let's look at the one where we sort of know what's going on inside that bucket. So the one where we have the evidence, we know what works.
Right.
What are some of the things, and I guess, well, you're in the U.S., but you also have an international, both an international background and international engagement in terms of your work.
Yeah.
What are some of those things in that bucket where we know clearly what works because of the evidence, because of the research, that arguably would be those two or three key things that, look, those folks running policy, running the legislative process, they really need to not just be aware of it, but start voting accordingly.
Yeah, so there's a great acronym called INSPIRE, and each of those letters is one set of policies. So it's easy to remember. I is implementation and enforcement of laws. Anything from like, you know, we should make sure we have laws that prohibit certain kinds of behavior. I mean, a lot of countries don't have that, right? So I is one. N stands for norms. How do we work on changing norms around everything from, you know, speaking out around these issues, how we respond when kids speak out, consent. So there's a lot of programs that are focused on norms. S is around safe spaces. How do you create, like I said, youth serving organizations and other spaces that are safe for kids? And there's a ton of things you can do there that are easy and don't cost much. P is around parenting programs. I is around income and economic strengthening. We know that when, you know, things like cash transfers for families that are really struggling can help make sure that those kids, especially in super poor countries, aren't, you know, then going to like sexual exploitation of their own children to get resources, et cetera. And spy. R is response. So like everything from like, once a kid has been abused, how do you make sure they have the right mental health support? How do you make sure they have like youth-friendly investigations with the police? You know, it's not the same to investigate a six-year-old and a 30-year-old. And finally, E is education. So all kinds of things related to education. So it's INSPIRE. It's a neat acronym to remember.
Absolutely. And yeah, even if you don't remember exactly what each letter stands for, you can quite look it up, but just keep in mind that word, and then you're in good shape.
And maybe, Alberto, maybe just to say a little bit more on, I want to make sure I get to this, like on the impetus of Brave and starting Brave, if that's okay.
Yeah, by all means.
Because one part I think that's important for your listeners to hear, and I talked about kind of inspiration from the HIV movement, is that I myself am a survivor of child sexual abuse. I've been sharing that publicly now for almost 15, a little over 15 years. And this idea of, you know, there's INSPIRE, but there's also the silence around this. And I think that's a really important piece that we need to tackle. And I made that decision to talk publicly about my own experience. I was, you know, just trigger warning, I'll say a few things and then I'll stop. I'm not going to go into details, but I was sexually abused by someone close to my family starting at the age of 6. And I ended up, you know, for a few years exhibiting a lot of the symptoms we see in kids, depression, suicidality, beginning, you know, in my teenage years to experiment with drugs and alcohol. And eventually, though, I was able to tell my parents what had been happening, and I was able to access a lot of support. I'm very lucky. You know, I come from a family that has resources, and I was able to do that. And it really transformed my life. And part of Brave is saying, okay, if I, who've been so lucky in so many ways, am ashamed to say publicly that I was abused, because somehow the connotation is I'm less than, or I'm broken, or there's something wrong with me, how can we expect the most vulnerable kids and teenagers around the world to come forward, you know? So that was kind of the personal part of Brave. And then the joy of linking up with 15 other survivor leaders is what we call ourselves, from around the world, representing every continent in the globe, who, like me, are doing this work and talking about their experience and have chosen to do so to create change. And together we've launched Brave about 2 years ago.
Wow. Well, first of all, thanks for sharing that story. I know you're a co-founder of the Brave movement, so, and you alluded to those other folks who are also on that journey and who are there from the outset. Give us a little bit of insight into who they are. What are they like? How do you communicate? What do you want to achieve?
Yeah. And again, I just want to say, for me, this inspiration came from some of the other movements where people with lived experience, it takes a lot of courage, especially when there's stigma, when there's discrimination. In some countries, it's real threat of, you know, especially men coming forward and talking about their own sexual abuse, of, you know, violence. And so it really takes a lot of courage to do this. And I felt like over the years, you know, when I first started sharing publicly, every time I speak out at some event and I say I'm a survivor of child sexual abuse, we always joke around. There are two lines afterwards that come to talk to us. The first line of people is like, oh, that was great. I love your work. I want to hear more. Give me your card. And then the second line of people, usually there are a handful of them, want to say, wow, like, me too, and I've never told anyone, or me too, and thank you for doing that publicly. And I've had like ministers, leaders in the UN, like people like in that category, and we're everywhere because the data is there, right? But for me, the cool thing was I got to meet more and more people over the years who were saying that publicly, and we started to form relationships. And so eventually, when we were ready to launch Brave, some of them were people I had known for several years. So we have, for example, just to give you some examples, there's Brisa de Angulo from Bolivia, who has actively became a lawyer and took her own case to the Inter-American Court of Human Rights, and recently won after 10 years, and has really done so much work around Bolivia, but now Latin America. We have someone like Matthew McVarish from Scotland, who is a survivor at the hands of his uncle, and he did a march through Europe to end statutes of limitation that culminated in a meeting with a pope, and has, you know, he's a playwright, and he's done these amazing plays, and his activism is just beautiful. We have someone like Tabitha from Rwanda and Uganda, who is a PhD in psychology and has her own organization and has been working to create support services for kids in those two countries and now across the continent. And Elsa Marie from India, who started off as an engineer and then ended up creating a digital platform called Red Dot Foundation, where you can online point out where you're experiencing sexual violence in the context of the streets and her community, because that was her experience riding the bus in India and experiencing sexual abuse. So it's just this like amazing group of individuals that together are the heart of this movement.
And those individuals, the diversity of their backgrounds, not just in terms of where they're from, but also what they're doing and how they're going about addressing the change that they want to see in their own way, whether it's through the legal process or through creating an organization and doing things that way. Does the movement then basically leverage each one of the co-founders' area of interest and expertise to drive forward the change you want to see? Are those initiatives that these co-founders of yours have separate from the Brave movement? Does the Brave movement itself have a concerted internal staff and operation?
Absolutely. So this is my moment to say thank you to the Oak Foundation, who
the Oak Foundation
gave us a big bet, which is a significant investment to get this off the ground over 4 years and make it happen. Yeah, so the vision of Brave is that we have two main strategies. One is to elevate and support survivor leaders and voices. And we do that by showcasing the leadership of survivor leaders everywhere, starting with the SAGE. But the really exciting thing around this movement building piece is now we're starting to have people come together and say, we're going to be Brave Uganda. We're going to be Brave France. So we're starting to have national and regional platforms. These 15 were just the beginning, right? We're at the global level, the leadership, and we have terms and we rotate and all of this has been set up. And the function is to advance the overall goals of the Brave movement, and then people have their own thing going on too. But now we're moving from global to regional and national. And at that each level, the groups decides on their priorities. What are we going to do together? Which is super important, right? Like the people that have created, as an example, Brave Uganda have a very specific set of things they want the Ugandan government to do, which are very different from the things that Brave Nepal wants the Nepalese government to do. And that's really important for movement, this flexibility. So one is elevating and supporting survivor voices and leadership. And the second one is aligned campaigning. So we have to pick a few campaigns every year because we can't do it all. And together say, okay, as a group globally, these are the things we're going to do. And right now our priorities are one, there's a big campaign we're putting together and already started launching on online safety for kids. We see the online space as one that cuts across every nationality, region. It's a borderless crime. And we don't think governments and tech companies are taking this seriously and doing enough to make sure kids are safe online. So we have a big online global campaign. We also have a focus on abolishing statutes of limitation is our second focus. Which really speaks to the fact that in a lot of countries, after a certain period of time, 10 years, 15 years, it varies, you can no longer press charges. But what we see in the cases of sexual violence against kids is sometimes it takes folks a long time. If you're abused at the age of 6, it might take you 20, 30 years to feel like I'm ready now. I've healed enough to go to court. And, you know, when it's ended, then you can't get justice anymore. For certain crimes like murder and others, there are no statutes of limitation. And we're saying this is such an egregious crime, there shouldn't be a statute of limitation. And Alberto, in every country, when you abolish the statutes of limitation, the amount of cases that come forward, this is what's allowed cases around the Catholic Church to come forward in masses. The Boy Scouts in the US, there are lots of examples, you know, in the UK, issues around schools and teachers. So that's a second priority for us that we're very much focused on this year. Hmm.
And now whether it's these global campaigns on online safety, statutes of limitations, or whether it's something more with a local flavor, whether it's in Nepal or elsewhere, what is it that someone listening to this, whether they are a survivor, whether they're a philanthropist, a program officer, whether they're all three, what would you encourage them to do? What sort of action would you like to see from them?
Thank you for that. Absolutely. So the Brave movement is a movement of survivors and allies. We need allies to help us move this forward. We also need survivors who aren't public. I just want to say out loud, we don't expect every survivor to be public. It comes at a great cost. We don't expect everyone to do that. So we always say we are survivors and allies working together so that no one feels pressured to reveal their own experience and feels like they can be part of the movement. So I encourage you to follow us online, on Twitter X, on LinkedIn, on Instagram. I encourage you to go to our website, bravemovement.org, and become a member. Individuals can become members. Organizations can become members. That'll start to give you access to our newsletter. We have a whole membership site. And you can start to see what's happening in my country, what's happening in my community, and figure out what are the ways in which you want to engage. And maybe you'll find out that, I don't know, you're in a country like, I'm just going to throw something out there, like Brazil, where there is no Brave Movement Brazil yet. And you want to say, I want to start the Brave Movement in Brazil, you know, and you'll see what it'll take to do that. So there are lots of ways to engage, and we need everyone to be with us if we're going to make a difference.
What's the website address?
www.bravemovement.org.
Excellent. Interesting how there's nothing, no Brave Movement in Brazil, because your roots, Brazil, right?
Indeed. We're working on it. We're just getting started. We're just getting warmed up.
Excellent. Excellent. Now, listen, before you run off, I'd love to ask you for a key takeaway. What's that one thing, if we could distill it to one, that you'd love for the audience to keep in mind after they finish listening to today's episode?
I think the main point I want to leave you with is everyone has a role to play on this issue, whether it's becoming a member or just even starting with, who are the children in your life? Are you an uncle, an aunt? Do you have, you know, kids, grandkids, small, you know, friends who have small kids? Like, you can make a difference. Talk to kids, ask them questions, make sure that they feel safe sharing with you. And that can go a long way if people feel like they have a safe adult to talk to start sharing with you when they have questions, but also when something goes wrong. Believe kids and be that safe adult for them.
Wonderful. Daniela, thank you so much for joining us back on the show. It's been 3 years. Hopefully it won't be another 3 years until you come back again and give us a little bit of an insight and update on how the Brave Movement is unfolding. But look, here is to continued success. I hope the Brave Movement Brazil sets up shop, and I hope this all plays out in exactly the way you'd like.
Thank you so much, Alberto. I really appreciate your invitation and your leadership.
Perfect, and that's a wrap. Thanks so much for tuning in. As always, you've been listening to a great chat with Daniela Ligeiro, Chief Executive Officer and President of Together for Girls and co-founder of the Brave Movement. For information about this conversation and more than 250 other interviews and case studies with remarkable thought leaders in philanthropy, sustainability, and social entrepreneurship, just visit our website at lidji.org. That's lidji.org. Thanks so much for tuning in. Please click that subscribe button, follow us, leave us a rating, leave us a review. It all makes a difference. Thoroughly enjoyed producing today's episode for you, and I'll catch you this coming Monday.